edu, scroll down to Bookstore, browse, and place your order today. That's conservative.edu and scroll to Bookstore. Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day, with the goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 3 regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is also heard on these 3 stations in Jacksonville, Florida, St. Augustine, Florida, and Brunswick, Georgia. Now there's a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. Your help is needed to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is crucial to take the next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com or to send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258, Attention Radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, again, thank you for joining us on Let's Face the Issues today. Very, very, very special broadcast today, very special issue that we're talking about. You've heard me discuss dozens and dozens of times in the past 4 or 5 years about some of the facts, some of the fiction about COVID. I had called the COVID, recently I talked about the ghost of COVID, where they were talking about the potential of other viruses that we need to mask up or be ready, or the potential of another pandemic. Well, I've got with me today as our very special guest, Dr. Reed Sheftall, and Dr. Sheftall is a researcher, a professor, author of the book Sanctioned, and a medical doctor. Sanctioned is the title of the book, The COVID Murders. And by the way, he's a man after my own heart. You've heard me say many, many times, the COVID vax murdered more people than COVID itself killed. I believe that I'm factual on that statement, and Dr. Sheftall is here today, and we're talking about that. And just before the top of the news break, we got into the subject about the PCR test of testing for COVID. Dr. Sheftall, tell us why that test is invalid and not significant, and why it ought to have never been used, and the details about it.
Okay, first let me say that your statement right there in your introduction was 100% correct. That the vaccine killed more people than COVID killed.
Yes.
Because COVID didn't kill anybody, because it didn't exist. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a very strong statement, but when you realize it was a rebranding of other diseases, remember the flu incidence of death went from 38 million in 2019 to only 1,500 in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Because all the common flu then was just simply, as you said, rebranded.
Rebranded as a COVID death.
Yes.
That's correct. So because, you were 100% correct. COVID-19 did not exist.
Can I say the reason it was rebranded because of M-O-N-E-Y? Money.
There are so many things that go into this, and I want to talk about why this atrocity was started in late 2019. Mm-hmm. And then please do remind me about the PCR test and the fact that the virus didn't exist. I want to prove everything I say now. It's very important to me to prove everything. But the reason this started in 2019, there were about 5 very good reasons that the powers that be wanted this to happen in 2019. I mean, think about the timing of it. Bill Gates bought shares in BioNTech on August 31st of 2019. Mm-hmm. That's 3 months before the WHO and the medical authority said that the virus was even discovered, and he's buying shares in the vaccine already. Mm-hmm. So he knew something was coming.
That's
maybe.
Right.
But the main reasons that they wanted this to be released in late 2019, if you remember, are they did not want Trump to be reelected. Okay, there were a lot of people that didn't want him reelected. The Democrats, the Rhino Republicans, and especially China.
Correct.
Because he was renegotiating all the tariff rates, and they were losing a lot of money because of Trump. China was. And they wanted to create a pandemic so they could blame the deaths on him. I mean, they blamed him for, they said he was a racist for blocking flights from China, while another group on the same side, on the woke side, was telling him he should have blocked the flights earlier. I mean, no matter what he did, they said that's it was right. His fault.
Still the same today.
But there was also a crisis in the repo markets, if you remember, in September of 2019. That can easily be looked up. And so they needed an excuse to inject a lot of cash into the financial markets to rescue those markets. And, of course, a worldwide pandemic is a great excuse for injecting cash in.
And it worked.
Yes, mm-hmm. It did work. And they also, if you remember, in Hong Kong in 2019, there were riots against the Chinese government that they couldn't even stop until they sent the Chinese military down there to Hong Kong to stop it. Remember all the highways that were blocked
Correct.
And everything? So they had to come up with an excuse not to allow people to assemble also. And so a pandemic is a perfect reason to force people to get in their houses and not assemble.
Yes.
They weren't even allowed to worship together in churches, as you well know.
That's right. We did, but hold your thought there for a moment, Doctor.
Yes,
I believe we have Santiago on the line. Go ahead with your question or comment, please.
Yes, God bless you, Dr. John Blow. My question is, what was the agenda? Why did they lie? And who benefits from it? That was my question. God bless you.
Thank you so much, Doctor. Would you answer that?
Thank you very much. I just answered it.
Yes.
The people that benefited by it were the people who did not want Trump to be reelected. If you remember, the price of gas was under $2, and so was inflation under $2, under 2%,
under 2%.
Excuse me. And not only that, but he had unemployment for minorities at all-time lows. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
How good his economy was clicking and everything? He was going to get reelected in a landslide until this happened. And, of course, Trump made some mistakes, too. The CARE Act was a horrible thing to
yes.
do. That's where all the money, the extra money to the hospitals came from and things like that. So he made some mistakes, too, with it. But the originators, the perpetrators, which I spent about 30 pages of my book talking about who was ultimately behind this, which we'll leave for now, because I really want to get into the science of why I can prove that there is no virus.
Let's do that for just a moment.
Are you ready to do that?
Yes,
now?
Do that.
Okay. Well, there are three ways that virologists prove the existence of a virus. Okay, demonstrate the existence of a
yes.
virus. They don't prove it, because I'm going to disprove it right now. One way is by demonstrating that viruses cause the cytopathic effect. Now, I'm going to keep this as simple as I can. It gets a little bit complex. It helps if you've taken biology in college, or at least in high school. But the theory about the way viruses work is, well, first let me, can I just tell you what viruses are? They are made up of a glycoprotein capsule inside which RNA or DNA resides.
Yes.
That's all they are. Mm-hmm. They don't have a respiratory system. They don't have a circulatory system. They don't have a digestive system. They don't have an immunological system, musculoskeletal. They don't have any way of producing energy, etc. So they're referred to as obligate intracellular parasites. Okay?
Gotcha.
The way that they replicate themselves is by going inside cells, according to the theory now, which is not correct, but I'm going to explain why in a minute. According to what I was taught in medical school, for example, and right now medical students are being taught the same thing, and they're teaching it in biology classes all over the world, but it's all wrong. They go inside the cell, they hijack the replication machinery, they let their RNA or DNA, depending on what kind of virus it is, and SARS-2 is an RNA virus, they hijack the ribosomes that are already inside the cells to make the protein components that they need to make a copy of themselves, and they make millions of copies. Then they break open the cell and release those millions of copies of viruses to go infect other cells and make millions of copies again. Okay?
Gotcha.
That is the theory. That's what the cytopathic effect is. Cyto means cell, and pathic means sickness. So it actually kills the cells. It breaks them open to release the new virus particles, okay? So that's one way that virologists claim to demonstrate the existence of viruses by showing cytopathic effects.
That's what I've seen several times replicated when the Marxist media would show something about COVID. They would show demonstrations.
Correct. But I'm going to show why that's not correct in just a second. Also, the second way, they have three ways of demonstrating that viruses exist. The second way is by showing pictures of the virus with an electron micrograph. Remember, I told you already that you can't see a virus with a light microscope because they're too small. No matter how much you turn up the magnification, because you get fringe effects, they're still a little bit technical, but you can't get a picture of it. Okay. And the third way is by sequencing the genome of the virus. So if you'll just give me a minute, I'm going to refute these three things and therefore explain why the SARS-2 virus was never demonstrated to exist. First, let's look at the cytopathic effects. They make a mixture of the human specimen that is supposedly containing the virus, and in the case of the COVID-19 virus, SARS-CoV-2, the specimen, human specimen that was used to sequence the virus was only done in one person. Can you believe it? He was one of the 14 people that was at the Huanan Seafood Wet Market. Do you remember the wet market theory? Okay.
Which was a lie to begin with, but go ahead.
It was a lie. It was debunked.
Yeah.
But let me just go over it for the people that would like a quick review of it. There were 14 people that got atypical pneumonia and they had a connection to the Huanan Seafood Wet Market, supposedly. That turned out not to be true. But the WHO and the CDC were trying to tell the story, and China were trying to tell the story that an animal such as a pangolin, if you remember a pangolin, had transmitted this virus through natural zoonotic spillover. That's a term that means that an intermediate host got the virus from a bat, and then that intermediate host, the pangolin, gave it to a human after some mutations, which allowed it to infect human cells. Because all of these animals have cells in them with ACE2 receptors, but they're all a little bit different. So there needs to be some mutations for it to get into a human ACE2 receptor. Of course, it was all wrong, which I will prove.
Yes.
But I'm telling you, that was the story.
That was the story.
So a 41-year-old Chinese man came into the Wuhan Central Hospital with symptoms of atypical pneumonia, and he had come from the Huanan Seafood Market. So he was the patient that Dr. Fan Wu sequenced the virus from.
Right.
Now, in order to do that...
Let me put you on hold for a moment.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Fan Wu, isn't that the female physician that they made disappear when she was giving information about this?
I think you might be thinking of the lady from Hong Kong that went there to work for a while.
Yes.
But now she has come to the United States.
Yes.
And she's alive and well.
Go ahead.
God.
Yes.
Okay. But in order to get a specimen from a person, you can swab their nasal pharynx, as we all experienced when they stuck the thing way up in our nose and it felt terrible and everything. You can just take nasal secretions, or you can obtain a sample called a bronchoalveolar lavage fluid sample. And what that is, and that is what was used, they, under anesthesia, they squirt some sterile saline down into the lowest recesses of your lungs, slosh it around a little, and then suck it out. And what comes out is a mixture of cellular debris, RNA, DNA, all sorts of stuff, especially if you're suffering from pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a lot of that stuff in there. And I'm going to talk about that in just a second. But because I need to tell you where the specimen came from. And it's sent through some gross filters to remove cellular debris and stuff. But viruses are way too small. They fall right through the filter. So in that collection of fluid are viruses. And the way that they demonstrate cytopathic effects is they take what's called a cell line, which is a bunch of living cells, and they put that concoction from the bronchoalveolar lavage on top of the cells, along with a culture medium, so the cells have nourishment, gentamicin, which is an antibiotic, amphotericin B, which is an antimycotic, which means it kills funguses, and they do those to keep the soup sterile from bacteria and everything. Mm-hmm. Fetal bovine serum, which is another source of nutrition for the cells, you know, to keep them alive while the viruses are reproducing themselves. But the problem with the fetal bovine serum is it has RNA in it. And of course, we'd like the virus RNA to be the only RNA that we're going to sequence and not get pieces of RNA from other organisms in
Correct.
The sequence. Mm-hmm. Okay. We also have the RNA and DNA from the cell line. And the cell lines that they choose, believe it or not, are African green monkey kidney cells for a virus that supposedly infects human lung cells. Now, why do you think they choose African green monkey kidney cells? They do it because those cells get poisoned by gentamicin and amphotericin B. So that makes them break open, mm-hmm. whether there's a virus there or not. We've done control studies now, and even when we don't put the human specimen in, you get the same exact breaking open of the cells with round particles that come out. And they're claiming those round particles are the viruses. Even six or seven of them, there should be way more than that if the virus is making
Correct.
Copies of itself.
If I could put you on pause for a moment, then from the green monkey
yes.
Philosophy or mindset, I've read behind researchers that claim that's the origin of COVID. Why is that wrong?
That's completely wrong.
Yes.
Yeah. they choose the African green monkey cells because those will show the world that they're being broken open. Of course, they're just being poisoned by the amphotericin B and the gentamicin. In medical school, we have to learn a lot of things. And the smart way to do it is for every single thing, you got to learn one or two real important things about it. And if there's any doctors out there listening, they'll tell you that the only thing they remember about amphotericin B is that it kills funguses and it's toxic to the kidneys. That's what you remember if you want to score perfect on all those tests they give you. But anyway, why choose African green monkey kidney cells instead of human lung cells if this thing is supposed to infect human lung cells? You want to know why? Because amphotericin B, gentamicin, aren't poisonous to human lung cells, and so they don't break apart and release the round particles. Now, you might say, well, what are the round particles if they're not viruses? It turns out there's an entity called an exosome. There's endosomes, which are inside cells, and exosomes, which get released. And exosomes have genetic material in them also. So they look very, very similar to viruses. But even the Journal of Virology, who has a vested interest in saying that viruses exist, will tell you that the editors will tell you that there's no way to tell the difference between a exosome and a virus particle, a virion. Okay? So the way to see if those are viruses or exosomes is to do the same procedure, the same culture procedure, looking for CPE effects, and don't put the human specimen in it. Therefore, no virus could have ever gotten in it in the first place. And when you do that, you get the same exact picture of the round particles coming out.
Yes.
So they're exosomes. They're not viruses. You
yes,
follow me?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Dr. Sheffield today, Dr. Reed Sheffield. Sheftal, I'm going to get it correct after a while. And, he is a medical doctor, author, professor, researcher. He has done thousands of hours of research and producing a book entitled Sanctioned, The COVID Murders. Sanctioned, The COVID Murders. And that book is available, I understand, on Amazon. And I'm delighted that we have this privilege of having Dr. Sheftal with us today. Go ahead with your thought on that, and then I'd like for us to transition back to a thought in relationship to the PCR testing
oh, yes.
and what that had redounded to in relationship to what we went through with the COVID. Why was it why was it used when most medical professionals should have known better?
Okay, let me finish proving
yes.
there's no vaccine, no virus first.
Right.
So I've disproved the CPE effect demonstration that virus exists.
Yes.
Those are simply exosomes that are produced when the cells get poisoned and break open and out they come. They also get starved. If you look at the steps in the culture sequence, you can see how the cells just get destroyed by the poisonous antimycotic and antibiotic and by starving them of the culture medium, which they needed to survive for nourishment. The other two things are photographs of the virus, which I've already talked about with an electron microscope. And like I said, even the Journal of Virology says you can't differentiate viruses from exosomes. So that eliminates the photographic evidence.
Yes.
Now, the third piece of evidence, I spent 20 pages in my book explaining, because it's very complex. It's how they sequence the virus. Okay, because if you could sequence a pure virus, if you could isolate the virus and sequence the genome, you would be proving that the virus existed, right? But there's real problems with that. And thank God for my background in physics, because I can tell you that the virus has never been isolated and purified. And the reason is the mechanism that they use to isolate it is a thing called an ultracentrifuge.
Correct.
And you are probably very familiar with how a centrifuge works. Mm-hmm. But for our listeners, material, the bronchoalveolar lavage fluid, is placed in test tubes that are radially out from the center, kind of like the spokes on a wheel. And that wheel is spun very, very fast. Mm-hmm. And material in that specimen of bronchoalveolar lavage fluid gets separated by its density. The more dense it is, the further out it goes.
Correct.
In the tube. And it's not centrifugal force like a lot of people think. That's a fictitious force that doesn't exist. Centrifugation works on the principle of, it's a manifestation of inertia. So I don't want to get into the physics of it too much. But anyway, the material gets separated into things based on density. And, of course, you can remove the section that has RNA in it. Okay, and that's going to be different in density than DNA, because DNA is deoxyribonucleic acid, so it's missing an oxygen atom. Okay, so it's a different density, and proteins, of course, are from different density. I'm talking about in the bronchoalveolar lavage fluid specimen. But once we get the RNA, and we know that SARS-2 is an RNA virus, you can't separate SARS-2 RNA from bacterial RNA, from fungal RNA, and from human RNA, which is about 98% of it, or 95% at least, of what was in the specimen. So you're going to get RNA from other organisms in the mix that is used to sequence the virus, because you never truly isolated the virus. Do you
Correct.
Follow me? It got mixed up with all the human RNA and so forth. And let me read you. We had a mathematician look at this mathematically, and he says, from the paper that he wrote about this, because he tried to reproduce Dr. Fan Wu's results using the same database and the same software, and he couldn't even reproduce the results. Now, that is a major no-no in science.
Major problem.
Major problem. That means Fan Wu is fiddling with the sequence, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But he says, notably, there is no evidence that the RNA fragments used to calculate the viral genome sequences are of viral origin. So there's no evidence that they even came from a virus, let alone the SARS-2 virus.
Correct.
He says, a repeat of the de novo assembly with MegaHit, that's the next generation sequencing mechanism, which we won't talk about, it gets a little bit complicated, showed that the published results could not be reproduced. In other words, he used the same sequencing mechanism and the same database and software, and he could not come up with the sequence that Dr. Fan Wu registered at GenBank, which is a clearinghouse for viral genomes. He registered it when he determined the viral genome. And that viral genome was what was used to make the vaccine from. Do you understand?
How could we go wrong?
It is so tragic. I mean, just so evil. It's yeah. incredible, because we injected those vaccines into 6-month-old innocent babies.
And pregnant women.
They were made based on a genome that did not exist in any human being or even viral capsule anywhere in the world.
Correct.
It's very upsetting to learn all this stuff. The viral genome existed only in silico. Now, you've heard of in vitro before.
Right.
That means in a petri dish, for example.
Correct.
You've heard of in vivo. That means in a living animal. Okay. In silico means in a computer. It's not even in the real world. And the reason it exists in the computer is because, and again, I don't want to get too detailed about next generation sequencing, but I can tell you roughly the way it works, and it's absolutely fascinating when you think about the implications of it. When you look at the bronchoalveolar lavage fluid, you spin it down, you get only RNA. There's about 56 million pieces of RNA in the soup that you end up with. And the way it works is that RNA gets converted to complementary DNA and cut into very small pieces, which get reassembled into a genome based on bioinformatics algorithms and templates from other viruses that have come before, such as the original SARS virus from 2003, which itself was made by the same fraudulent procedure. You see how it can...
A very serious question.
It can be propagated all the way through years.
So my question is, at this juncture...
Yes, sir.
How much of this did Dr. Fauci know, understand, or did he, was he deceived himself and then became the deceiver for the world?
Dr. Fauci was involved in almost every aspect of this.
Okay.
And he was involved in it when it was done with AIDS also, which used the
Correct.
PCR test to diagnose
yes.
people. And I'm going to talk about the PCR test finally in just a second. But I wanted to disprove all three ways that virologists demonstrate that viruses exist.
Okay.
So the SARS-2 virus never existed. The genome was in silico in a computer, but it was used by scientists all over the world. They can get the GenBank sequence and make a vaccine. And that's how Pfizer, BioNTech, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, et cetera, made their vaccines, you see?
It was based on that.
Yes, it was based on the genome. Of mm-hmm. course it was. Because you have messenger RNA in the vaccine. That messenger RNA is from the genome sequence, right?
So, go ahead.
So it's terrible. I mean, I can read you some more quotes from our mathematician's paper. But he said they found human ribosomal RNA in it. Human stuff in the SARS-2 sequence. Human DNA in the SARS-2 sequence that was used to make the vaccine.
Yes.
Do you want human RNA injected into your grandson?
No wonder we have so many diseases, myocarditis and pericarditis, et cetera, as a result of the vaccinations.
I have a list of 9 pages of single-spaced horrible diseases. We call them serious adverse effects
yes.
from the vaccine, which I'm going to read a few of them to you later. Because a lot of them cause paralysis and a lot of horrible things.
Ladies and gentlemen, I know this is a very interesting subject. As a result of that, we're going to continue this thought and this interview on tomorrow's broadcast. So let me remind you to tune in tomorrow as we continue with Dr. Scheftel, as we talk about the COVID murders and whether or not COVID really existed and the deceitfulness that we've been faced with down through the past several years as a result of it. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on the broadcast today. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located 1 mile south of I-295, FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 10, for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with First Conservative Baptist Church. A reminder,